I'm Sam Zeff, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Northeast News has been doing journalism in Kansas City since 1932. It's weathered all sorts of changes and gone from print to a website and a podcast. Today, we speak with a publisher who is celebrating 21 years at the organization. We'll ask about the past, present, and future of community journalism in Kansas City. Then, this week's been great, but the summer heat is set to return, and when it does, you won't have to look far to find a cool nosh that's perfect for sizzling temps. That's because we have professional advice on foods to help you beat the heat. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. We start today with how the news gets covered. The news about the news is pretty bad. Pew Research says newspaper circulation last year was the lowest since 1940, and since 2008, the number of reporters in America has dropped 25%, which leads me to suggest that community journalism, like the Northeast News in Kansas City, is more important than ever. My first desk, I suspect, would agree. Joining me, Michael Bushnell, for 21 years. The publisher of the Northeast News. Michael, thanks for being on Up to Date.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me, Sam.
You think that your mission has changed in the 21 years that you've been there?
Looking at it from the 30,000-foot level, probably not. The mission is the same. We're embedded in the community. We cover community news and community events. Now, how that gets covered, it's 180 degrees different than the way we did things 21 years ago when we first turned the key to the offices on St. John Avenue, if you will.
How so?
At that point in time, we were really coming to the close of an era where community newspaper publishers and owners, it's often said that they had a license to print money, and that was going to be a retirement plan for actually my journalism professor at Missouri Western. Is it, I'm just going to buy a community newspaper, go someplace, and retire. Well, not so much anymore. And that really started in 1998-99 with the birth of digital and web. And, now we've got to have a website. And I don't know how many years we had a static website, but now it's constantly changing. We're constantly adding content. And really, the definition of content has changed so much. Even in the past 5 years, to the extent that, now content is content. And I share often, I will credit other news organizations and share some of their stuff as we've been contacted by news organizations. Hey, can we share your stuff? So it's a completely different playing field now than it was then.
When you look back at it, 21 years ago is really when newspapers specifically started to feel the financial pinch in a hard way. That's when the return on investment demanded by Wall Street of publicly traded companies is through the roof. So now when you look back and you think, well, this is my retirement plan, do you think that maybe you should have been playing the lottery?
I still play the lottery every single week for that reason. It really, I didn't think about it. It was more of a mission for me because we didn't have a community voice at the time. In 1998, the Northeast News was really more of an ad rag than it was anything else. And the editorial content therein was more dedicated to the advertisers. And I came in as an 8-year veteran of being the president of a neighborhood organization. So I had interfaced with City Hall, police departments, and different departments, county, state, and realized, there's something good here. There are good things happening in this community, and nobody knows about them. So we decided as the business organization, the Chamber of Commerce, I started a newspaper there, and it was a monthly because we didn't have anything. And then the paper came for sale, and one thing led to another, and 6 months later, all of a sudden, we're turning the key, and here we are.
Yeah. Step back and tell me more about the history of the Northeast News and what it's meant to that community over the last 90 years or so.
It, it, It was a community paper in 1932, and that's when it was started. And it's gone through a series of, we're the fourth series of owners in that time frame. And really, it was more dedicated to community news back in the 40s during the war years. And it actually had an offshoot called the Brighton Bugle that it was a little mimeographed sheet of paper that was inserted into the Northeast News and distributed to the people that lived along Brighton Avenue between Gladstone Boulevard and Knight Street. And it was news about the boys in the war, the boys in Europe. And this person, you know, just got their wings and they're flying today, or this person was just promoted to sergeant. And through the years, you know, it really kind of progressed and it became the voice for our community, the Northeast community. And then something shifted and it kind of morphed into, the Thrifty Nickel or, you know, American Classifieds, where it was an ad sheet. And I said, no, there's far too much going on in this community that needs to be covered, that the public needs to know about and to engage with their neighborhood organizations and with their business organizations in Northeast. So we started the process almost immediately, July 1st of 1998. And by September, by Labor Day of 1998, there were no more ads on the front page. It didn't look like a classified ad rag, and we had editorial content. Yay!
Also, in the last 21 years, we've seen the Star, the dominant media organization in the community, shift away from covering necessarily different neighborhoods. The beats have been carved out more by topic. In the last 21 years since you've been there, have you seen? Do you feel that you're in competition with the Star or ever in competition with the Star? Are you covering news in conjunction to make it a more robust news product for people who live in your neighborhood? How do you see yourself in that media world?
We compete with everybody and we compete with nobody. We compete with everybody in terms of, you know, as Dan just noted, that's the big story. And we've been covering that, the ICE story as well. And a lot of times it's, you know, how quickly you can get a story up, how this has got to get out. I don't know. It's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, get it up and get it out. And to that extent, we're in competition with everybody. But then again, we break news in our neighborhood that we've got people coming to us say, hey, can we use this picture? Or hey, can we share this story on our news platforms, digital and print and otherwise? And so it's a lot more collaborative now, I think, than it was. And we have the Star really, as a print entity, we've seen them close their bureaus in the Northland, Johnson County, and all over the city. And it's really become more concentrated, you know, at 17th and Grand. And I look at that and go, man, we're all in this together. We got to all talk to you. You talk to me. Let's get this covered. Let's get it out.
You know, one of the things we were talking about before we came in here was the Board of Equalization and my summer of reassessment hell as I've been covering this. And I'm curious to hear how you cover this reassessment mess in a way that speaks to the people who are your audience. Is there a different way that you approach an ongoing story that affects the whole county?
We will take that story and we'll tell our story will be a microcosm of the bigger story, because we can take it to, you know, Mrs. Smith down the street who got a 285% increase in her taxes, or Mr. Jones across the street who, you know, they went up 1,000. Our taxes at the building went up almost 300%. And so we'll take that and we do a couple of things with it. I turn the straight up news over to our managing editor, Elizabeth Orozco. She's very talented and capable, and she's done an excellent job of covering this thing. My side of the house, I'll approach it more from an editorial standpoint, and I've written about it a couple of different times, and I've showcased or spotlighted a couple of properties at 43rd and Paseo where the property tax went up 1,900%. And so from that, I want to advocate for those people in our neighborhood. And we've got socioeconomically, you know, we go from the bottom of the bottom all the way to the top to the top. And we're going to write for every single one of those people because it's going to affect them, you know, negatively in the end. So, and especially the small businesses, I kind of profiled a couple of those, and that reassessment brought a new small business plan into the community. And that is, if you know that it's going to be 5 years down the road before your property hits the steps of the courthouse for sale, then that's my new business plan because I can't pay those taxes. And how many people are going to adopt that mindset, and what kind of negative impact are we going to see in 4 or 5 years on the courthouse steps?
I want to come back and talk a little bit more about how the editorial, the business side, and the commentary side all fit together. But first, I want to go back to another story that I think you guys have been covering. That's the Kansas City Museum. And I'm wondering, talk to me about how you decide to say, you know what, we're going to stay on this, right? This is important to our community. We're going to stay on it. So walk me through that editorial process.
I have to come at this from, I was a neighborhood association president in the Skerritt Renaissance neighborhood for 10 years. And when I moved in 1990, just some nobody, I was told, you need to stay on the museum. And at that time, the museum was very unstable, and we don't have the museum that we have now. So it's an issue that I've carried with me for 30 years. And when the shift came, I think it was in 2000 when Union Station took over management and operation, that's when really I came on board and said, hey, we need a whole separate board of directors. We need a whole separate mission. And it's been something that I've championed not only in the pages of the paper on an editorial level, but personally as well. And now we're one of the museum's community partners, but we're going to continue to cover that issue and cover the museum's events, you know, back room and front room moving forward, because A, it's a very important issue to the citizens of Northeast, and B, regionally, it's going to become a more important issue to the city, the county, and the portrayal of regional history.
I'm wondering if there are other community journalism efforts in the metro that impress you.
Yes. And I want to break apart that term community journalism, because community journalism has a couple of definitions. In my definition, it's geographic. In terms of, say, for example, Kansas City Hispanic News, right, or Dos Mundos, that's a whole non-contiguous community. The Call paper covers that, you know, the African-American community. So there's a number of communities in Kansas City that I think deserve community journalism. And one of those outlets that really, really impresses me, and I've sat in this studio and shared time with this individual, and that's Joe Arce at Kansas City Hispanic News.
Yeah.
He's micro-local with his news focus. He's an advocate for his community, West Side, and the Hispanic community. And we've been in business almost the same amount of time. And he really impresses me as somebody who's a strong advocate for their community and then puts that in his print product.
You know, you brought in the latest copy of the Northeast News, and I was glancing through it, and I saw a lot of ads, which leads me to ask, so you're making money?
maybe. let's put it this way. We're making payroll, and we're paying the taxes, and we're paying the utilities. This is not something that I'm not getting rich off this. It's here again. It's more of a mission and a service to the community. We're doing okay. Let's put it that way. And the shift to digital has allowed us to monetize many, many more platforms in terms of, well, you can sponsor this or you can sponsor that. And so we're doing all right. That said, we're actually moving to change the business model.
Tell
a little
me about
bit.
That.
And to create a regional community journalism incubator where we partner with a local university. And UMKC has been a great partner for us. We've gotten great interns from UMKC. And we want to become a workforce development center for media professionals and media students. So they can come in and do a 10 to 12 week internship. They'll learn everything about journalism, multimedia journalism, podcast, radio, video, print, the whole kettle of fish. And when they leave, they're going to be proficient in a lot of different areas, and they'll be comfortable in a professional setting.
Michael Bushnell is the publisher of the Northeast News. He's my guest here on Up to Date. I want to go back and talk about the difficulties, if there are difficulties, in being both an editorial voice, that is down the middle, straight news reporting, but also having to go out there and sell ads, be part of the community. In bigger news organizations, there is a wall between those two operations. How do you navigate all of that?
You have to be careful, but at the same time, in a lot of journalism organizations where print is a product, that wall seems to be disappearing in terms of sponsored content. Mm-hmm. And we've done some sponsored content pieces before with Ride KC and with other organizations around the city. So I think people, at least in our community, realize when the publisher shows up or at the chamber lunch, we're gonna talk about doing a news story, but you know what? I'm gonna talk to that guy about maybe running some ads and increasing his, you know, potential for his business. And hey, over there, that's a great sponsored content opportunity. So a lot of that on the editorial side, I'll throw over to our managing editor Elizabeth Roscoe or one of our interns. But there's sometimes when I'm out doing a sponsored content piece or I'm doing a podcast, and then the next minute I'm selling an ad. So you got to wear a lot of hats. And the small business hat is one of those hats you got to wear.
Do you think that the folks that you cover feel any pressure from you to buy an ad to get coverage in the newspaper? It's a tricky thing that what you've just discovered. I've never had to do it because I've just worked for big media organizations, but this feels very tricky to me.
It can be a little bit tricky. But one of the things that I make clear is, you know, if I'm going to go in there and talk to them about a story, I put it right up front. You don't have to buy an ad to get this. I'm here on a news, you know, this is free to you. This is editorial coverage. So I'm taking my ad hat off, and we need to understand that moving forward. Okay, then let's talk. So I just make it clear up front.
I want to go to the phones. Frank from Lawrence is on the telephone. Your question for Mike Bushnell from the Northeast News. Well, maybe he's not there.
I was going to say, wait a minute.
I haven't run out of things to talk about, though.
Okay, good.
So what did you, as you're looking, making editorial plans, what's next? What's the big story that's facing the historic Northeast?
We've obviously, the museum is an ongoing story. The ice story continues, as Dan was here earlier. That continues to be a major issue. And that continues to be a major issue because we've got a lot of Latino people that live in Northeast, so that really affects them. That's something that they're watching very, very closely. And another thing, the police department is very, very busy doing some things up in Northeast that are making the community safer. So those are really the big things. And then going right back to BOE, the tax assessments, that if you look at our social media platform, those are the three big things that everybody's talking about.
All right. We've got Frank on the line from Lawrence. Frank, you're on the air with Michael Bushnell on Up to Date. What's your question?
Mike, how many days of the week do you publish? Is your newspaper by subscription only, or is it in machines? Are you online? What is the cost of one issue? And how come I've never heard of this newspaper before? Is it outside of Northland only, and is it online? I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Frank. We are a community weekly. We break on Wednesday. We are online at northeastnews.net. We are a free community paper, so you can subscribe to us. We will mail it to you. However, we are in racks all over Northeast at City Hall, places downtown, and our circulation is 10,000. Our website gets 13,000 views a month. We have 11,000 Facebook followers. How's that?
I don't know. I don't know what you what you paid Frank to to get that on the to get that on the radio.
See you at Free State this afternoon, Frank.
Outstanding news you can use. I want to get one more phone call in here. Bill from Waldo. Bill, you're on with Michael Bushnell from Northeast News.
Hey, Michael. I really enjoy the Northeast News.
Thank you.
But I do think you ought to be a little more accurate about the reappraisal process. A 100% increase in reappraisal does not mean a 100% increase in taxes. And I'm concerned you're really scaring people when you make that misstatement.
No, I am speaking in regards to the amount that our taxes went up, and I have seen taxes increase as much as 1,900%. So those are factual statements. I'm not trying to sensationalize.
Right. And there is a lot of nuance with all of these Board of Equalization stories. I want to be completely honest and say a couple months ago, I didn't even know the Board of Equalization existed.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is this body that is possibly standing between people and whether or not they're going to be able to pay their taxes or maybe even keep their homes, depending on which activist that you mm-hmm. speak with.
Exactly. And people have referred to this is gentrification 101. And if you look at Kansas City's West Side neighborhood, this is how the change began 10 or 15 years ago. And you're seeing this in neighborhoods all across the city, and other journalism outlets have done far more than we have in pointing these out.
Right. I want to stay with the phones. Al from Kansas City, you're on Up to Date with Michael Bushnell.
Yeah, I know you're tight. Just real quick, I was just wondering if you do any development of the cultural side of Northeast, the development of East Bottoms, with Rieger and all these things tied in with the museum, but the idea that it's a more integrated cultural development of the community. And there is a problem with gentrification, of course, but I'm thinking more, do you do any special issues, pushing?
Great question.
Culture is huge, and we've recently been profiling local artists that live and work in Northeast. I did a podcast with Rachel Cross. She's a tattoo artist that owns a studio on Main Street that did great work for me. But anyway, we've got muralists that we've profiled, Hector Casanova and his work with the Kansas City Art Institute. We just did a piece on him, and we've been very involved with the Rieger's reopening and covered. They released something, I think it's last year about this time, actually, where they found a tunnel underneath the building and they were going to excavate it. So, yeah, all of that really ties in, and that's one of the reasons why we became a community partner with the museum in order to capitalize on that and get that out to a bigger audience.
How's the podcast doing? I've listened to a couple. I've seen them up on your website. How's that doing?
It's doing pretty well, really. We get more and more listeners every single week. I mean, we're not setting the world on fire with it, but it just depends on who we interview. The interview that we did with Hector was exponentially larger than the one that we did with our exiting intern from Missouri State University. So, I mean, I get it, but we're constantly looking for new people to talk to and interesting people to put out in a podcast. And that's one of those new platforms that, as a journalist 21 years ago, a what? So it's fun, and it still is fun. So I think we're going to be doing this for a little bit.
Outstanding. Michael Bushnell, 21 years, the publisher of the Northeast News. Michael, thanks for being here on Up to Date.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
Just ahead, foods that can help you keep your cool in the summer heat, and a little later, the weekend to-do list. I'm Sam Zeff. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. Well, you should be looking out for the return of the real summer weather in the next couple of days. And as I contemplate sweltering temps, my mind naturally turns to gazpacho. and other warm weather treats. Joining me now on Up to Date, Chef Ted Habiger, owner of Room 39. Ted, welcome back to Up to Date.
Thanks for having me.
Now, if you have some summertime foods that you want to talk about, you can give us a call, 816-235-2888. I want to get some breakfast, lunch, and dinner suggestions, but first, I'm wondering if the body reacts differently to cold food. Do we crave cool eats more when it gets hot?
You know, it depends. You know, there are times where I think that having something cool put into your system when it's really hot is beneficial, but there's also times where, like, spicy food can actually make you feel cool. So during the summer, I don't always shy away from high spice. You know, yeah, I like to balance that with some nice acidic wine or something. But something hot like a stew, you know, or something like polenta maybe isn't the right thing. But gazpachos are great, and I love a little spice in my gazpacho, almost like a salsa at times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's one of the most refreshing things.
Let me just say that I've always heard this spicy food keeps you cool.
Yeah.
But I've always considered it just part of the jalapeno habanero industrial complex. But it actually does it does work in your body to keep you
sure,
a little bit of cool.
Sure. It makes if you think about sometimes when you eat a jalapeno, it does make your brow sweat a little bit, and so that provides a little bit of wind in combination with you sweating cools you off. It's a good thing. You know, when you get heat exhaustion or something and you stop sweating, that's when you're in trouble. So a little bit of sweating is good.
Right, yeah. Right. You know what makes my brow sweat? This boredom equalization. That's what makes my
I know. I was listening to you. Boy, that's some heavy stuff compared to what we're talking about.
All right. I'm going to talk breakfast with you right now.
Sure.
Personally, I like a big platter of biscuits and gravy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if you have a better hot weather solution.
Well, I love eggs all the time, okay? So one of my favorite breakfasts for hot weather is a cold egg salad sandwich, where you just take hard-boiled eggs and chop them up and add Dijon mustard. That's a little bit of your spice there. Mm-hmm. Mayonnaise, maybe some creme fraiche. On toast. It's one of my favorite things for hot weather. I also love granola and yogurt. And I was joking with somebody at work the other day. We've been getting in blackberries and blueberries, ad nauseum. I mean, we have tons of them coming in the restaurant. And my cooks look at me like, what are we going to do with all this? You know, and they're gone by the time that the next week comes around. We have no problem using them. I'm probably eating half a pint a day.
Is it really that simple? Does a little Dijon mustard mayonnaise? I mean, that's how I make my egg salad, but
yes,
I was thinking
it is.
That
it is.
You were going to tell me something that...
No, the quality of the egg matters. The quality of the bread matters.
How do you make sure
matters.
That your egg is high quality?
Well, you buy from a trusted source, first mm-hmm. off. So, one of my go-tos is always Campo Lindo Farm. And they deliver, 30 dozen eggs a week. I get another 45 dozen from another farmer in Higginsville, Missouri. And lately, the yolks have been so orange, you know, because the chickens are eating all this beautiful grass out there and all these wonderful bugs. And all that protein is being transferred to the yolks. And the yolks are just gorgeous right now. But you don't want to buy old eggs. You don't, try to buy from a local farmer. If you go buy them at a farmer's market and pay, $6 or $7 a dozen, I know that sounds like a lot, but really it's not. You know, paying $3 for a dozen of eggs, there's a problem with that. Like, there's something wrong with that situation. There's a government subsidy somewhere that is coming from somebody else, or maybe it's not good for your health. I don't know, but there's something wrong with $3 a dozen eggs.
Yeah, let's move on. Any other breakfast suggestions before we move on to lunch?
The other thing is the kind of drinks you drink in the morning. Mm-hmm. I always like iced coffee, or iced chai or something like that. I drink iced coffee pretty much year round for the most part because I can drink it fast and I like a big jolt of coffee like right away and then I'm done for the day. But for me, you know, iced coffee, just a little bit of sweetness in there, a little vanilla syrup or something. That's delicious. That's my favorite thing.
Yeah, let's talk lunch. And yeah. I'm going to suggest that maybe you've got salad suggestions for lunch. But take me through your cold, warm weather lunch menu.
Sure. So the classic thing here during this peak time is heirloom tomatoes. Always good. You know, we take a lot of pride at the restaurant for never refrigerating our tomatoes. That's one thing.
Should never refrigerate your tomatoes.
I completely agree. In fact, I've done that at home. You know, because at home I don't go through the product as quickly as I do in the restaurant, and I've put it in the refrigerator, and then I always come back and it's terrible.
It's terrible.
It's just mealy and it doesn't work. But to me, like if you add heirloom tomatoes on the plate. And you make a pesto or for pesto, when it's really hot, basil's great because it's got some mint qualities. But I love mint pestos too with heirloom tomatoes. I think that
just
works
mint
really well.
Or mint and basil.
Well, you can add them both together, but you know because they have that similar quality. But pure mint pestos to me are really interesting. You know, like they're the ones that really and they tend to have like this almost like they're. You know, it's like a clean feeling, you know, mint, there's a reason why mint's in toothpaste first off, you know, but it does have this kind of clean, refreshing feeling. You add a little bit of tanginess with some goat cheese or, you know, you could go the lighter style and do a more of a creamy mozzarella or burrata. That's always good.
So I've bought heirloom tomatoes.
Sure.
And then taken them home. And been disappointed.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that I don't know how to pick out an heirloom tomato. So give me some heirloom tomato tips here.
Well, an unripe heirloom tomato is still an unripe tomato. So that's usually the problem. And I see this too. You know, when we purchase from, you know, we'll purchase from four or five different farmers. And sometimes the very beginning of the year, they'll tell me in June they've got heirloom tomatoes. And I'm like, you know, I believe you, but these might be from the hothouse or you know, they're just not the right time yet. You know, you shouldn't be eating them that early. So finding an heirloom tomato that you know, and finding the varieties you like there's one that's got like a little bit of peach fuzz on the outside and it's yellow. I wish I knew the names of all the heirloom tomatoes. I really don't. But this peach fuzz one is one of my absolute favorites. And if it's too hard, it's not a good tomato. Definitely has to give a little bit. So with your heirlooms, make sure that you get different varieties, find the ones you like, and then try to pick those out, you know, in the future. I also like a plain tomato too. You know, I didn't like tomatoes until about 1999. I was almost 30 years old. I mean, I was one of those kids that was like, no, I don't like tomatoes. I'm not going to eat tomatoes. And then one day, I was on a boat and it was really hot and I had a tomato sandwich and it was the most delicious thing I've ever had and refreshing and cooled me down and it actually it had a little bit of Lowry's seasoned salt on it, which was really good. You know, that's a great thing to, you know, if you just have Lowry's at home and you put that on your tomatoes and just a regular tomato. This one was from a farmer in DeSoto, Kansas named Thane Palmberg. And that's the one that like turned my tomato tide, you know.
I'll tell you, I didn't have the greatest tomato ever till I moved to Philadelphia and spent my summers at the Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
And you get them Jersey Shore tomatoes, and it's unlike any other tomato you've ever had. And it really turned me – I always ate tomatoes, always liked them, but turned me into a tomato freak. Before we move on to dinner, anything else for lunch that you're liking?
Sure. Another salad that I really like in the summer is salads with corn in it. So, you know, sometimes I take corn and I'll put it just with an arugula salad and some simple cheese or something, maybe some ricotta. But I also like doing there's a dish that my mom made like every summer that I love. And she used canned product for this. So this is like black beans and that sort of thing. But it was corn, black beans, cilantro, chopped onions, red onion, very simple salad. But that's a really delicious summertime meal.
Dinner seems a little tricky to me. You know, you think summer, you think grilling. That could be a little heavy. So give me some dinner suggestions.
Well, yes. Yeah, so when you're
and then we're going to talk dessert, and
sure.
I'm very excited about that. but first, let's get through dinner.
Everybody likes dessert, right? So a couple things on the grill. So the grill is great because it doesn't warm up the house. It's also great because you can do things on the grill that you can set and walk away from for several hours, and they'll be perfect. So, you know, barbecued pork ribs is one of my favorite things in the summer. I have a Weber grill. It's nothing fancy. It's just the $100, you know, basic model. And you get a rib rack for one of those, and you season your ribs. You put them in there. You put your fire offset and maybe a couple wood chips on that. And then you can close that lid, have the flue wide open, the top and the bottom both wide open. You can close that lid and walk away for 3 hours. Totally walk away. And when you get back, they're perfect. You know, like they're oftentimes they're all open up and look at them, and that really ruins them. You know, like it's that impatience that because then you think your fire is going to die and you need more heat and then you add more coals and then you come back and they're black. You know, you really want to kind of stick to this and have the confidence to be able to just stick it. You know, stick the lid on there, close it. Go, you know, 3 hours later, you got your ribs.
Got a rub that you like for your ribs?
Yeah, yeah. I kind of been doing the same rub for 20 years now for myself. And we do this at Brewery Imperial on Friday nights. We do the same rub. But it's you know, I'm not going to – there's no big secrets to it, but it's basically paprika, white sugar. I don't put brown sugar in it. Brown sugar tends to burn quicker. At a little bit lower temperature. So I try to smoke my ribs at about 250, 275 degrees. But I use, salt, white sugar, paprika, onion powder, garlic powder. That's about it.
Mm. Another grill suggestion you got?
Grilled corn elote. This is, the Mexican street corn that you can buy in Mexico or in the United States. There's, you know, restaurants that do this around town. I like it on the cob. You can get it off the cob a lot of times, but you basically grill the corn, put spicy mayonnaise on there, and then a cheese called cotija, I think is how you pronounce it. Cojita?
Cojita.
Cojita. Cojita. That is, it's almost like a Mexican Parmesan cheese, you know, and you sprinkle that on there, and that is it tends to be a showstopper too. Like this is one of those things like people that have had this before love it. And people that haven't had it are surprised by it and really turn into like big fans, you know, once they have it. It's always it's something we like to put on the menu just, at dinner service. And we haven't gotten corn yet. Like I am expecting corn today. I'm hoping. I got a little bit last week, but I'm dying for corn right now.
Like, it's not late this year, is it?
It feels like it. I'm not sure. Like it seems like I'm getting corn, you know, middle of July, but. It's past middle of July, a couple of weeks now. So, you know, it is one of those things that changes just – and maybe all that rain we got just slowed it all down or, you know, it is a little late.
A couple minutes left. And so I want to I don't want to give short shrift to dessert. So talk to me about some summertime desserts that you like.
Yeah. So a classic one to do is an Italian dessert called panna cotta. So it's basically, you go.
Talk to me more about that.
Well, and it's so simple. This is basically just cooked cream, cream or milk or a combination of those, sugar. You can put anything in it, any sort of berry or fruit or something. And then a little bit of gelatin. You cook that on the stove. You get it up to the temperature. You add the gelatin. You pour it into a mold. And it's great. You know, it's basically an eggless custard, very light, very creamy and refreshing. And it's served cold. You know, that's a great one. And then ice cream is so classic. I've been doing an Amarena cherry ice cream lately where I make vanilla ice cream and then add a specialty Italian cherry that's cooked in its own juice. So it's very rich and has big cherry flavor.
When you mix that into the vanilla ice cream, or do you use it as a topping?
Yeah, so we have, you know, this is no secret. A lot of restaurants don't buy the $5,000 ice cream machine. You know, I have the little Williams-Sonoma one, you know, that I have that anyone can have in their house, you know. And so we make vanilla ice cream base and then spin that. And then at the very end, we add this cherry and its juice, and it's a great ice cream. We also do cornbread ice cream, which is really fun.
Now, you've only got about half a minute to tell me about that, so I need you to dig in and really tell me.
So cornbread ice cream. This is something that one of our cooks did, a guy named Macy, about a year and a half ago, and I've recreated it, I think, as well as he did it. But it's basically a creme fraiche ice cream. So you make instead of making it with all cream, you add some sour cream in it. And it gives it this kind of lemony, acidic flavor. Yeah. And then you make cornbread, and you try to get the crispy edges. And then you add that cornbread in at the end, too. And it just makes for a really interesting ice cream. I did that with a rhubarb dessert at the beginning of the summer that was really great.
Wow. Chef Ted Hebiger from Room 39, Summertime. And the eating is easy. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you for having me.
We're rocking and rolling, and that can mean only one thing, the weekend to-do list. And here, Brian McTavish. Brian, nice to see you again, my friend.
Sam!
Is that Alice Cooper?
How'd you know?
tell me about Alice.
Some people rock, some people roll. Alice rocks and rolls, and then some. Alice Rocker, the shock rock king, although he prefers the title Shock Rock Godfather, I don't know why. He's still doing his thing. You should be part of it. He'd like that. 7 o'clock Friday at Starlight Theater. He is on the road, Sam, with his highly theatrical, big surprise, concert tour, his 37th concert tour.
Holy moly.
Only 37.
I think he's older than you.
He's older than me and you, which is a little harder to believe, but I think it's true. Anyway, the current tour is called Old Black Eyes, which is obviously an allusion to Old Blue Eyes himself, Frank Sinatra, who Alice met. It's documented in photography, vintage photos. Why? He met everybody. He met Frank. He met or hung out with all of them, like from Groucho Marx to David Bowie. He was part of the scene and then some, and still is. I've seen him in recent years. Dynamic package of greatest hits, of course, but these insane bits that have long gone along with the tunes, we know them, the guillotine, mm-hmm. the electric chair, the snakes, the fake blood, and more than a few baby dolls impaled on swords, I dare say. But they're billion-dollar babies. May I also mention this? Did you ever see Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band?
I did, of course.
I'm sorry. because the most horrific thing I think Alice ever did was appear in that 1978 Hollywood stinker. He did this entirely forgettable, I wish it was forgettable, sort of this nasal spoken word version of the Beatles song Because. And there's that. He will not do that on stage Friday at Starlight Theater. I've seen him. He's great. Solid entertainer. True showman.
Is a doggy, a sweet doggy, standing next to a rose. A flower grows in the soil. There's still hope for life to exist, for us to survive, to thrive, and survive.
Might that be Tenacious D?
You're onto this. Yes, it's Jack Black, the frontman of Tenacious D, the comedy rock duo of Jack Black and his buddy Kyle Gass. They pray and play. They do both at the same time at the altar of breathtaking heavy metal wisdom. At least it takes their breath away. Anyway, they're having fun. This is going to be a fun show. 8 o'clock Saturday at Starlight Theater. Gosh, where do you start with these guys? It's all about Jack Black, really. Black, the famous funny guy on screen and such films as High Fidelity, really his breakout role in the 90s, in which he brilliantly portrayed a not-so-record store clerk. He was in School of Rock. You saw School of Rock.
I loved School of Rock.
I love School of Rock. He taught the power of rock and teamwork to the kids. Anyway, would you believe that Tenacious D, which is, again, going to be very funny and loud at 8 o'clock Saturday at Starlight Theater. They actually have won a Real Deal Grammy Award for Best Metal Performance back in 2015. Now, this further, Sam, this further blurs the line, if there still is one, between serious and silly heavy-duty rock. Here's the bottom line. You can bang your head, and I know you do, but you can bang your funny bone at this show, too. Be there. I'll say it for the third time. 8 o'clock Saturday, Starlight Theater, Tenacious D.
Hey, before we move on, has Starlight Theater ever rocked like this weekend coming up?
No. No, clearly not. How could it? Because here's the thing. On Friday, you get Alice, the real thing, right?
Right.
And then on Saturday, you get Tenacious D, not the real thing, but in some ways more real than the real thing. Because right. They'll make you laugh and just cry at the beckoning power of rock.
What you got next?
What do I got next? Okay, here's some more fun.
Don't stop is what I'm saying.
Oh, I keep going. Okay, Andrew Dice Clay is in town. Does that ring a bell?
He's still alive?
He's going to prove it. He's got shows. He's the stand-up comic who in recent years has become a viable, legit, dramatic film actor. So he's on stage doing his funny thing, still getting yucks, at 7:30 tonight. Shows also at 7:30 Friday night. And let's see, Saturday too, I think 7:30 and 10:30 Saturday. Where, you ask? At the Comedy Club of Greater Kansas City. Back in the late 80s. Dice Clay, he was this foul-mouthed stand-up comedy guy, right? But what was his thing? I don't know if he's still wearing the long sideburns, the leather jacket. His cigarette was always on fire. He was the self-styled Macho Man character. He was kind of dirty, kind of sexist, and controversial. Listen to a little bit of his act now, right? Here's a sample. He's bemoaning the aches and pains of getting older.
The minute I wake up in the morning, and I open my eyes, I'm like, what's this now? And my wife's laying there, she's going, what happened? I go, what happened? I'm 58 years old, that's what happened. I get out of a chair, my knee buckles, I bang against the wall, that's what happened. I look down my underwear, it looks like Santa's beard, that's what happened. And she's like, did you sleep good? How good can I sleep? You're still here, go make me coffee.
Nice guy. Anyway, Andrew Dice Clay, he's a character, and he's going to play that character tonight, Friday, and Saturday at the Comedy Club at Kansas City. You're a butterfly, and
butterflies are free to fly, fly away. Well, we know who that is. Tell me about this.
Elton John will not be in Kansas City this weekend, but he knows about the power of flying away butterflies, and we're talking about that because it's the Festival of Butterflies. There's a butterfly release and related activities 9 to 6 Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Powell Gardens in Kingsville. Plus, festival alert, Kansas City Taco Festival, 75 varieties of $3 tacos. Use your imagination. Noon to 8 Saturday, noon to 6 Sunday, downtown at Kansas City Live Block.
Take this, Brian. I'm going to move around the studio and dance while you talk about this.
What do you mean, gonna move? You're just coming clean. Pull him off the ceiling, somebody. Okay, are you ready? I'm not. Are you ready for a summer twist?
I am. Tell me about it.
I knew you would be. Okay, so you can slap on your sandals, maybe take the beach sand along with you, and get pointers on the twist and other dance moves of the 1960s, 1 to 2:30 Saturday at the Kansas City Museum at the Historic Garment District downtown at 800 Broadway. I can't talk anymore about this?
Can't talk anymore about
this.
I'm
done talking about this.
Well, you know what? You told us everything we need to know. Brian McTavish, weekend to-do list.
Thanks a lot, man.
Oh, happy to do it. All right, Tuesday on the program, we learned what FEMA teams stationed in Missouri are doing to help residents recover from this spring's flooding. You can hear that and other previous episodes at KCUR.org/up-to-date. Follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR-up-to-date. Give me a follow. I'm at Sam Zeff. And don't forget to like KCUR on the Facebook. Tomorrow, the film critics return with recommendations that will give you an excuse to get out of the heat and into the theater. The show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Emily Aiken. I'm Sam Zeff. You're up to date.